Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Real Hauntings Podcast. Before we jump into this episode, we did have a little warning we wanted to pass by to you.
Yeah, we just want to let you know this episode does deal with some sensitive topics like such as suicide and enslavement of people. And so, you know, if those are triggers for you, we just want to caution you on that. We think it's a really great episode. We hope you listen to it, but totally understand if you want to sit this one out.
Yep. And with that, on to the show. What's up, everyone? I'm Noah Daniels, and we're here for another episode of the Real Hauntings Podcast. On this episode, we are celebrating the return of Kat and JJ from their summer vacation. Guys, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, y'all.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, and we can't hear all about your vacation, but to do that, you'll have to subscribe to the Patreon. So jump on that Patreon. We've got some shout outs we'll need to do, as well as we've been getting some new Patreon members, which we're really excited about. And on this episode, we have an awesome guest from New Orleans. Ryan, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thank y'all so much for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to like come back from, we were just in New Orleans for a few days. And to come
Really? I missed y'all.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Cool.
We're not allowed to talk about it too much.
Right, apparently. We're saving that for the Patreon.
Gotcha. Well, I actually joined the Patreon right before dialing in, so I am one of the top tier members now.
Oh, hey! Thank you so much.
You're the one that I was texting excitedly about to Kat and JJ, so that's, that's very cool. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, Ryan, before we get going too deep, as you know, you've listened to some episodes, we like to find out where our guests are on the Believe-O-Meter. How spooky are they really? Zero meaning you don't believe in ghosts at all, and 10 ghosts are absolutely real. Where do you fall on that scale?
I would say about a 6.66.
Okay.
Oh,
I like that.
Cool. We can.
Wow. It took me, my brain is still on vacation. So I was just like, all right, very specific number, but I get it. I'm with you.
Wow. There you go.
JJ's like a math and science guy. I can relate to that. Well, Ryan, how did you find the podcast? How did you get into Real Hauntings?
I was in the middle of doing some deep cleaning and just kind of looking around on Spotify, searching for podcasts involving ghosts and hauntings. And after browsing several, I kind of got sucked into one of you guys. And it was actually your dry, sarcastic sense of humor that hooked me. Oh, I think you were telling somebody there was a shadow person behind them the whole time and nobody responded. And I'm like, yeah, these are my people.
that sounds like me.
Noah, you need to have that printed out in frame.
I probably will. No, that's awesome. Well, I know that you emailed and mentioned the Purple Mommy episode. That was one that you enjoyed listening to.
Yeah, it sure was. Yeah, and it was actually not only did I listen to that first one, but then I listened to like four immediately after that, and then emailed you guys right after that, and y'all mentioning New Orleans places and being interested in talking to somebody. So it kind of seemed very serendipitous.
Yeah, cool. I personally love New Orleans. I am originally from Mississippi. I've been in Atlanta now for, 14, 15 years. But I grew up going to New Orleans a lot, and it definitely has a special place in my heart. Kat and JJ, I know y'all just went. Had you been many times before this trip?
We had both been once separately, but it had been like years ago for both of us. It was fun to get to see it again and to get to go together, and yeah, we had a great time. I'm trying to imagine what you did there as a small child, Noah, because I feel like it's not really geared towards that. But
well, I did go with my parents, and that was mainly like eating vacations, I guess. You know, I'm sure they drink and had fun, but as a kid I just remember us eating a ton of seafood and like kind of seeing the sights. Then of course in college I went a lot and enjoyed all the festivities New Orleans has to offer, and I did go to one Mardi Gras, which was crazy. It was a lot of fun. It was super intense. But Ryan, I'm curious, because I think you have been in New Orleans for like around 20 years, is that right?
Well, much more than that, actually. Spent probably about 30 years in New Orleans now. I only moved away to go to LSU right after high school and was there for about 6 or 7 years, and then moved immediately back.
Okay. Were you at home during Katrina, or were you at LSU during that time?
No, I was at LSU. Yes. I was living in a 3-bedroom house that was about maybe a 5-minute walk from campus. And all of my family are from the Lakeview area, which is one of the areas that was completely destroyed. Mm. Wow. And so overnight I had 11 people living in my 3-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
Oh my God. Okay. That's incredible. I have a lot of questions about LSU because I have
been... go for it.
I have been on campus once, and like it felt so crazy to me that I'm like, was this even a real thing, or did I like imagine this and just like it's ingrained in my memory as like a fake memory? But I remember there being like a tiger cage on campus with like live tiger in it. And there were also like Indian burial grounds or something.
Yeah, there sure are. Yeah.
So is the campus at LSU, I mean, I imagine having a cage tiger and an Indian burial ground. Were there a lot of ghost stories on that campus?
I don't remember hearing too many. In fact, I actually, the dorm that I had to live my first year of campus life, I was immediately across the Indian mounds, which are one of the big spots that people always hang out at. So, I mean, it's just something that's more historic and cool, but I've never really heard many ghost stories surrounding that. But yes, the tiger enclosure is like something like a $15 million rework that they just recently did, where it's like Mike the Eighth or something like that, I think, that stays in there.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, because I know they wanted to make it like a more realistic environment, and I hate to use the word humane, but make it like a more celebrated thing that the tiger was in there kind of deal.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm curious, Ryan, so you kind of have experienced New Orleans post, and this isn't the Katrina podcast, but just as somebody who grew up going to New Orleans, I haven't gotten to talk to a ton of people who experienced that and been there before and after. You know, we talk a lot about energy on this podcast, and did you feel a big shift in spirituality? Did you feel a big shift in like the energy and the way people felt towards ghosts and all of that after Katrina, with so much loss taking place? Or was it kind of just eventually got back to the same New Orleans that's always been, which has always had a lot of that stuff? But I was just curious how much of an effect did, if any, Katrina have on that part of New Orleans?
I guess to be fair, it's probably too soon to tell, because even though there is that element that's basically like saturated throughout the city, that I mean, there was just so much loss and death that, you know, there's bound to be stories. But you know, I just know that for the rest of my life, I'm going to be hearing crazy stories of people experience staying home, sitting on top of, you know, a bar in the French Quarter with just an assault rifle, waiting for anything to barge through or something crazy, you know. So, but in particular stories, that's a good question. I haven't heard many.
Yeah, I was just curious. I know we, I was in New Orleans not too long after Katrina, and we kind of went through and saw some of the devastation, and I just will never forget seeing the homes, you know, the markings that they did on the top of the homes to let the first responders know, and if people were alive or what have you from that house. And I just, as a young person seeing that, I think it really, it just reminded me of like, you just never really know what's going to happen. So to move on to ghosts, I'm sure the audience is like, what is happening in this podcast episode? But again, I just, you know, New Orleans means a lot to me. So it's nice to talk to somebody from New Orleans and get to ask some of those questions. How old were you when you had your first supernatural experience? Was it in New Orleans?
Yeah, it certainly was. When I'm thinking about it, I was raised Catholic, and that's basically what most of the people are. It's like a strong percentage. So, yeah, when I went to Baton Rouge, I was kind of shocked to find that isn't the norm everywhere. So I was just raised going to Catholic schools for grammar school and then high school. So there's just this, you know, always this attitude of, you know, ghosts, not ghosts particularly, but of like angels and demons and such. So when I was a little kid hearing all this, I would always get worked up about it. And I've always been a very empathic individual, like very sensitive to, you know, the energy of the room and people's emotions and things like that. And so I was worried about being possessed by a demon. And I asked my mom at one point, like, how to, you know, what do I have to do? Like, what do we do to avoid this? And she's like, oh, you just don't think about it, which is probably the worst thing you could tell somebody. So.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, exactly, Kat. That's what that sounds like, something my parents would have told
me. It's like a high stakes version of that game where, like, if you think about the game, you just lost the game.
Right.
I hope I just made a bunch of people lose the game who are listening to this.
I just lost the game.
Do people still do that? I don't know. That was big in high school.
I will say JJ's done it probably like 4 times in the past 2 months. Like, you still actively play that game.
I mean, I lose the game a lot.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm just going to pretend. Like,
this is crazy.
It was just some stupid thing where if you thought about it, you'd have to say it. And then the
somebody whole listening right now is like, God damn it, I lost.
Yes, yeah. And the whole class is like, I lost the game. Yeah.
If you just lost the game, email us at realhauntingspodcast@gmail.com and let us know.
What a throwback. And in New Orleans, one thing I've always heard of that I haven't seen, but I know it's supposed to be there. Have you ever seen like voodoo stuff? Is that something that you've ever experienced? Oh,
yeah, yeah. I mean, they have a lot of stuff like that in the French Quarter, especially, you know, centered around Marie Laveau. And I was doing a little bit of research just so that people from New Orleans don't disown me. And apparently she has her tomb in one of the above ground cemeteries that's in Mid-City, which my family also has one, too, which pretty interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So those tombs, what they do is a family will have a tomb and the casket will be put in there for about a year or two and then taken out, and all the remains will be scattered to that point and opening up space for another family member. But people will go to Marie Laveau's tomb and leave gifts and mark a big red X in chalk, and apparently she's supposed to grant wishes.
And for our audience who may not be as familiar with who that is, can you tell us a little bit about her?
Yes, basically, she is probably the best known, I would say, in the world when it comes to voodoo in general, especially the Creole New Orleans variety. She was featured in American Horror Story Season 3, I believe.
And Angela Bassett.
Definitely. I mean, other than that, there's a bunch of like touristy things in the French Quarter where you can go, you know, buy artifacts. I don't know how authentic most of it is, but I'd be curious to kind of seek out someone who is, you know, a really strong adherent and genuinely believes in this stuff. And, you know, instead of kind of like the internet, you know, article variety.
Yeah, and that's, you bring up a good point. I'm curious. So Kat and JJ, that's a subject we really haven't touched much on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Have you all ever experienced voodoo stuff, or do you have any thoughts?
We did learn a lot about it. And the very first thing we did was, JJ planned a ghost voodoo and cemetery tour, or cemetery voodoo and something tour.
Yeah, I think it was mainly cemetery and voodoo and like history, although we didn't actually get to go in the cemetery because it has like these high walls and so there's very little airflow, so it's been closed ever since the pandemic. But we did go by the cemetery you mentioned and kind of peek through the gates,
and we learned a lot about Marie Laveau. And we learned a bit about voodoo too, and that it's like a religion that was brought over from a lot of the enslaved people.
First West Africa, then Haiti, and then New Orleans.
But it was really interesting, all the things we learned, like with the dolls. Like originally it was really just to mark, you know, you'd go into one of these shops or going to see the doctor, air quotes there, and they would pull down a doll that looked like you, or that they would make it look like you, and they would like, oh, I have a headache, or like I have a sore throat, and they'd stick a pin there so they would remember you when you come back the next time. They could, oh, there's that doll. Okay, they had a sore throat. Did those herbs or that like thing I had you say, did that help? So that they could see, and then they would mark like what they tried. So it was really more just a way,
like a filing system.
Yeah, to maintain like medical history, which was so cool.
Yeah, really cool.
And then, of course, every tour, everybody you talk to has maybe a different version of that. Like we did go into a store, and, you know, they said it was really just like you're putting pins in the places you want to heal, which is kind of the same thing. But it was interesting to see how that story has translated so much over time into a whole bunch of different versions.
Yeah. And how Hollywood's kind of made the voodoo doll a totally different thing than what it.
Did you all get matching voodoo dolls of each other?
Oh, next time. We didn't do it this time, but you know what? We got some bars of soap. We might carve some up.
And then another thing about Marie Laveau's her tomb, I guess, like it was this whole backstory. Even before we went, JJ was like, oh, and this is what I know about the cemetery. If you see an X on any of this on the plots, that means that they used to be witches or
like a voodoo priest
or, but that was another thing that had been miscommunicated over various versions of it. Do you want to explain what it really was?
Oh yeah, I do want to bring it up just because I don't want any of our listeners to deface any any grave sites. But our tour guide basically said it was like something that a tour guide back in like the 70s or something just invented to kind of like spice up the tour. Mm. It's been an issue of like, you know, they had to like completely recreate Marie Laveau's tombstone because of how much damage. Wow. Someone apparently like just dumped a whole can of pink neon paint on their
and she said that's because she had a dream or a vision of Marie Laveau coming to her being like, if you paint my entire tomb hot pink, then your wishes will come true or whatever she needed done.
She's a big fan of Clueless, is that?
Yeah, maybe.
She probably saw Clueless in the other realm and was like, I love this movie.
Yeah, I need some flair. Well, Ryan, do you know like people in your life who truly believe in voodoo, or is it just something people kind of just talk about and find interesting?
I would be the latter. I really don't know anybody. I mean, you know, people that are interested in it and pursue that, but not, you know, very intensely. There are those people here for sure.
Yeah.
And well, I would even say like, she's so fascinating because her mother and grandmother all practiced voodoo, I don't even know the original name of what it is.
Yeah, there was like different variations of the name that kind of evolved each time it traveled.
But. And I truly believe, you know, when someone is full-heartedly into their religion, their faith, I believe them that they believe that, you know, I'm not necessarily 100% sure what I believe. But so she was very devout and she was also Catholic. So I don't know how that mixed together. I guess you had to be Catholic back in that time or else you would get scrutinized too.
Yeah, well, originally it was like all the enslaved peoples in the kind of French colonies were, you know, had to convert to Catholicism. But then apparently they would meet up after Catholic Mass and practice, you know, voodoo rituals to kind of keep alive that part of their West African culture.
And so the amazing thing about Marie Laveau is that she just became really popular and she'd get invited to all the parties and she knew all the like, you know, famous socialites and she would get to know their maids and she would find out all the juicy details from everybody's parties and everybody's household. So she would know like who's having an affair with who or whose bastard kid is whose. And so she would run into like these elite people at the stores or wherever and she'd be like, oh, I heard that, you know, or I know who your firstborn really is and like freak them out and trick them into thinking that she really knew all these things. And I'm sure she was like super intuitive and empathic and like very observant. I mean, she's a woman, so duh. But but I think that's a big part of how she got her legacy too.
That's really cool.
Yeah, we love
that. Yeah, that sounds very very typical of New Orleans. When you mentioned the going to mass and then practicing whatever you practice afterwards, there's just kind of represents the duality that is New Orleans, like a contradiction of culture of drinking and imbibing and just kind of being crazy while at the same time it's a city that functions in any way normal cities would. So, you know, these things just kind of live together, even though they shouldn't, basically.
Yeah. Right. And when people come to New Orleans, are there like specific places that you recommend that they go because they're supposed to be haunted?
Oh, definitely. The main one that I would recommend would be the Myrtles Plantation, which I was checking out before this, talking to you guys, and Time Magazine had ranked it one of the top 10 in the world of haunted locations. And it's about an hour and 15 minutes outside of New Orleans, right outside of Baton Rouge in St. Francisville, Louisiana. And it's a plantation house where one of the slaves was basically tending to the family. And she would listen in to the owners to try to get the gossip like Marie Laveau would do. And she was caught holding her ear up to the door. So it was her left side and they cut off her left ear. Yeah. So in revenge for this, she made a cake for the family and put oleander juice up from the flower, which causes some really nasty symptoms, but eventually results in death. So all the children died. There were three children and the wife, I believe. And so she was caught by the other slaves who would fear that they would be punished for it. And she was hung from a tree. And I think in 1992, there was a picture taken that's very famous that National Geographic examined it. You can clearly see a woman in right outside of the house, and you can stay there overnight for, I think, about $160. But there are several different things that happen over the course of the night. And I've always wanted to, especially like taking like mushrooms or acid or something like that, just to kind of, but I don't think I'm brave enough to do that.
Yeah, that's,
but I would recommend that.
Oh my gosh.
Well, and Ryan, so in that picture, where does it, do you see a ghostly image or something that they,
oh yeah, at? Very clearly. Yeah. It's about a, you know, average person height. And the owners were taking a picture of the back house roof for insurance purposes and then noticed it afterwards.
Wow.
And you could definitely find it easily if you look at it on the internet.
So yeah, that does sound really spooky. I think I would rather have an experience with like a Casper-y kind of ghost, the super scary dark moments in history that bring out ghosts. I'm just worried one of those would like follow me home or attach itself to my kid or something. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. You're curious about it, but you know, if you pursue something too hard, you know, there, whatever you do, there's going to be consequences you can't foresee, especially with something like that. There, you know, so I can understand the wariness.
Yeah. And
so when we do our seance, are you going to specifically ask for a Casper like ghost? A
friendly ghost. Yeah.
I'd be really interested to know if that's just like a thing we get to do.
Right, right. It's like, no, next ghost.
It's like a video game we can just cycle through and be like, well, I want that one. You know, that,
right. Yeah.
That ghost,
the
please.
The Tinder of ghosts, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah. That's going to be quite something if we can pull that seance off. And so Ryan, is there anything that is like centrally located in the French Quarter area or like Magazine Street around that area that is super haunted that tourists can visit?
Oh yeah. Probably the most notorious one is the LaLaurie House, which is on Royal Street. And recently it was owned by Nicolas Cage, who had bought that, but I think he had sold it afterwards. But yeah, the story with that is really chilling. And I would warn people about the details of this, just so they have a heads up, because it gets some really graphic imagery. But there was, around the 1830s, there was a husband and wife who were very elite socialite types. And the woman's name was Delphine. And she would always throw a very lavish dinner parties, and the guests would notice that the slaves that were being used to help serve everything would always be different. And so there was speculation about that. But I think in 1832, especially, there was a fire which broke out, and firefighters came to the scene. And as they were putting out everything, they went upstairs and they saw that one of the rooms was barred. And so to inspect the damage, they opened it up, and there was just a treasure trove of horrors. It was literally a torture chamber. They had limbs torn off of bodies. They had one woman was hanging by her entrails, I believe.
Oh my God.
There was one person who had a hole in their skull with a poker sticking out of it. So there was just like many, many people that were, after they were killed, they were buried underneath the floorboards in the entire first floor and second floor home. So upon seeing all this, the town was shocked, and it was reported in the newspaper too, but they were chased by a mob that wanted to string them up and were never seen again. They left without being caught, but wow. It was them and their two daughters, I believe.
Oh my gosh. And so, I guess there's still a lot of mystery around that. Since they were never captured, is kind of the understanding that like they were like both the husband and wife were doing this together, and
it seemed that way. They were what can only be assumed to be just sadistic practices. They were both doctors, from what I had read, so yeah. They had knowledge of the human body. And, you know, maybe they were trying to perfect techniques. There's really no telling. But the way the fire broke out is interesting as well, because one slave was chained to the stove in the kitchen, and Delphine had threatened to bring her to the upstairs room. And she was so petrified by this that she started a fire to avoid having to go up there. And that's why the home went up.
Wow. Oh, you're right. That does need a warning. That was really intense and scary.
This is the, when I was first in New Orleans, I went on a tour that took us to that house. And then here's the, when it was at night too, and you're supposed to take a picture with your flash on it. This is where you see the lady walking in front, or you see the orbs upstairs. And I got orbs in my picture, but I cannot find it. I'm sitting here looking.
Really? That's cool.
So Kat, you've talked about that before, right? So that was that house where that took place.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that was the same one. Now I have heard about that house. I didn't know the full story. So that was really interesting to hear. That's super spooky. And Ryan, I know you said that you feel like you're someone that is sort of intuitive or is intuitive. Have you visited some of these places and felt kind of like that dark presence, or does it usually not affect you too much?
No, I definitely noticed that. It's just for me, more than anything else, it's never really seeing apparitions, but it's always hearing noises, and just have that general anxiety that will well up in you, that you're kind of overwhelms your senses, which is hard to record or to even communicate. But I've worked in the French Quarter and walked by several of these places without knowing anything about it, and just felt really bad vibes in general.
And when you say you've heard noises, can you describe that for us? What that is like for you?
Depending on the location, the story that I'm going to tell you guys definitely involves that. But that weird anxiety and feelings you get whenever you feel like you're being watched. And when I'm thinking about certain particular locations, nothing comes to mind explicit, but definitely in the story that I'd like to share.
Well, yeah, let's jump right into it. Let's hear it.
Cool. Okay, yeah, so I had gotten back from LSU and I was living in the city, and I had a friend who was trying to find roommates because his other two roommates were moving out, and this house is located right in the middle of the city uptown. Like, if you're looking at the city and there's a crescent river at the bottom, if you draw a line through the middle of it to bisect it, it's right there at the bottom. So it's this three-story home, which a lot of these homes are like 150 years old. So I went to go check it out, and it's three stories and enormous. And it's originally a duplex, but they had reconverted it to being one individual house. And in the back, there was a pool. So that's really what caught my attention. I was like, man, this could be great. So I had decided to go ahead and move in. It was just me and my other friend, who was a firefighter. And we would planning on having another roommate move in. And so I spent a lot of time there by myself because he was at the firehouse maybe half the month. And so when I went to go check it out and see what room would be mine, he's like, yeah, you can have the master bedroom, which sounded great. And I walked in, and there's this really old ancient bed that was bolted to the floor, this wooden floor. And I was like, all right, whatever. And then to the right of that, there was a whole separate room that was, I guess, the master bedroom of the house next to theirs, the other part of the duplex. And so I was really excited about it. But as the first couple of months went by, I started to become just notice more and more kind of anxiety welling up in me. And I would be alone at night watching TV downstairs. And with all these wooden floors and kind of really high 15-foot ceilings, sound would travel really well. And so I would hear steps up and down the staircase. And my roommate had a dog, and the dog would just sit at the base of the stairs, just looking up at nothing for hours on end. And I was just like, man, that's really curious. And, I'd leave for work, and I'd have turned off everything in my room, and I'd look up and the lights would be on. And it happened very frequently. And so in the room itself, I was just really not sleeping well in the bedroom. And so, I was getting such anxiety and feelings about it that I asked my roommate, after hearing all these like steps up and down and all this stuff, is like asking him if he thought the house was haunted. And he had said that, no, man, it's not haunted. It's fine. It's like, really? I've been living here for about 3 years now. You haven't seen anything? And he said, no. So, they got so bad that I had to basically move from where the bed was located on that one side into the right side, and like bought a separate couch and slept on that and pretty much lived there for the duration of my stay. And during night, I kept late hours. I work in the service industry, so typically stay up pretty late. And so I had this hanging kind of chandelier that would flicker on and off randomly and start swaying back and forth. And whenever something odd like that would happen, I have a cat and I'd look at the cat, and the cat would be looking at that too. So it's like, all right, I'm not crazy. At least the cat's seeing what's going on here. And so I was tidying up about 4 months in, and I found a kind of closet space that I hadn't noticed before that had a treasure trove of, I guess, the previous homeowner's possessions. There was just a ton of stuff, and there was a big photo album. And so I was looking through the album, kind of get more information about everybody. And it was obvious that a family was raised here over like a period of 50 years. And I don't know if people died in the house, but it would make sense. But so after finding that out and kind of looking for other things, like I got this really bad feeling that they, like whatever energy, did not want me messing with that, like wanted, felt like their privacy was violated. And it was so intense that within a couple of days of finding that, I was like, all right, you know what? I'm just going to go buy a padlock. I'm going to put it on this door, and I'm not even going to think about it ever again. And almost immediately upon doing that, everything ceased. And I, you know, was able to coexist with whatever was living in there and never really had any kind of awkward experiences after that.
Wow. So by taking that action, you felt like you kind of appeased the energy or the spirit that was in the room?
Yeah, it very much seemed that way, because I was feeling all this. And, you know, then finding out that after the fact, you know, it kind of put the pieces together and connected all those dots. But I definitely believe that that place was got something going on with it for sure.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that none of your roommates were like, oh yeah, this is haunted, mainly because they offered you the master bedroom.
Yeah.
I feel like, right? If you're moving in somewhere and the people who are already living there are like, you can have the master bedroom, that's a red flag.
Mm-hmm. Too good to be true.
Yeah. Yep. They're like, just ignore how it's bolted to the floor. No big deal.
Right.
That's we have to bolt it or the bed starts floating in the middle of the night. But, you know, that's not a ghost thing. That's just gravity.
That's right. Yeah. No, it didn't happen.
Wow. I mean, did you ever feel unsafe, you know, when the chandelier was swinging or any of that? Or did you still, or was it just kind of an uneasy feeling? How would you describe that?
For sure. It was definitely uneasy. There were like another specific time I was downstairs watching some movie late at night and all the lights were out and I was the only one in the house. And I heard very audible footfalls down the steps. And if you've ever been inside kind of like a very spacious wood floored room, you like that sounds travels when people are walking. So I heard distinctly somebody walking up behind me, and I was laying on the couch facing the TV, and I stopped it and looked around, and the dog was also looking in that direction too. And like I kind of got really spooked and I had to get out of there. So like left the house for a few hours and then came back.
Mm. Man, this reminds me, JJ or Kat, it was one of you. I think it was just one of you. The episode we had where the person from Australia got so scared living in that home, people were like moving out of their rooms onto couches and stuff. And you were...
I remember that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. She was the one that was in the movie.
I was like, was this the spider one or the... Or the...
No, it was a very recent one, right?
I think it was you, JJ, that was the...
Yeah, it was, yeah.
JJ never remembers.
Everyone's story is like so unique and fascinating, but like also they kind of blend together in my head. And it's no knock on anybody's story. It's just my dumb brain. That's it.
Oh my gosh. Wow, Ryan. Well, I'm glad that you were able to figure out a way to make that house habitable for you. How long did you stay in that location?
I stayed there for about a year. And then after that, I just moved out. I wasn't in any rush. You know, once everything was kind of taken care of, you know, I kind of, you know, I do kind of miss a place I'd love to stop by. It was at a great location. It was probably like a couple blocks from where the parades run down Napoleon Avenue. So it's just kind of cool to be in the central of anything. I live in the suburbs currently, which is like kind of by the airport. But yeah, that was really cool.
Awesome. Do you have like a threshold of like, I will put up with this level of haunting given this location or this amount of rent? Is that something you've thought about before?
Yeah, I mean, I guess everybody kind of has their moment where, you know, enough is enough, you know, or, you know, it causes you to react, whether or not you're thinking about it. But, you know, anything that would violate your person, I think would definitely be that for just not only me, but for people in general.
That seems like a very like Savannah, New Orleans thing that people have to consider. Like, you know, man, the rent is right. I'm right here in the square. Ah, but so these pesky ghosts.
The shelves every now and then. It's fine.
There's 60 people buried under me. It's fine.
We're so close to downtown.
Yeah. Oh man, that is super spooky. Well, Ryan, we're kind of coming up on our hour. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience before we get you out of here?
Yeah, definitely. I've been helping my friends start their first restaurant in Old Algiers, which is immediately across the French Quarter. It's called Plume Algiers.
We just celebrated.
Definitely. I wish I could have got you guys to go visit, but it's the only traditional Indian restaurant in the city. And yeah, just really happy for those guys. And we'll celebrate our 1 year anniversary this Saturday.
Well, that's awesome. Amazing. Yeah. And we'll have to come down as a podcast to do some haunting stuff in New Orleans. And we'll definitely link up with you because.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, that would be great.
Oh, we are so down for that. Yeah. I feel like the first night, well, we stayed on Algiers Point.
Oh, cool.
If I said that right. And we love Indian food. That would have been amazing. But yeah, I feel like the day we got, we want to hear the name of the restaurant, but also the day we got there, we were both like, should we move here? It's like so inviting. It was really wonderful.
I would love to
do a podcast trip there. What was the name of the restaurant?
Yeah, it's called Plume Algiers, P-L-U-M-E, and Algiers after that.
I kind of wish he would have said it's none of your business. Get it, guys?
No, I make that joke literally every day.
Ryan, I think we're kindred spirits.
You guys can hang out. We'll go on another ghost trip. Or we'll just go drink.
Yeah. You guys can tell us about all the puns you came up with when we get back.
Well, Ryan, as a fan of the show, you know how we end the show. With that, I'm Noah Daniels.
I'm Kat.
And I'm JJ.
And I'm Ryan. Thank you guys for having me. Ooh.